Morning, day two in Shkalim. We are now today doing the Daf Gimel in Masechet Shkalim, and we left off yesterday right in the middle of the Amud. We're at the two dots on Beis Amud Beis. Masechet Shkalim, the first parak, is talking about the collection of the Chatzi Shekel. Every Jew is required to give a half a shekel to the Beis Hamikdash. And yesterday what we did is we established the fiscal year. The fiscal year in the Beis Hamikdash begins on the first day of Nisan. Two possibilities, said the Gemara yesterday, why that should be. One possibility is because that's Ketchila, meaning that's the way it was in the first Mishkan. The first Mishkan went into operation on day one of Nisan. So since that was the first Mishkan and the first day of operation, so then historically that's always going to be day one of our fiscal year. It's going to start on the first day of Nisan. Another possibility suggests the Gemara is based on a drasha. We have the words Bechacho Lechacho, Bechache Lechacho. I think it goes the other way around. Bechacho Lechache, that sounds much better. That in 1 month you're going to be collecting for all months, meaning the 1 month is going to be the month and all months are going to follow it. So, and how do I know that Bechacho, that month, is referring to Pesach? So the Gemara says Gzeres Shavah. We have a Gzeres Shavah that arrives that tells us that that's so. So there are two explanations, but everyone's in agreement that the first day of Nisan is the beginning of the fiscal year. So what do we do? So the Mishnah told us yesterday that 1 month in anticipation, so we get everyone ready. We call everyone to arms. Time to bring your money. So the first day of Adar, the Mishnah tells us, we make an announcement, a proclamation throughout the entire country, that it's time to bring your machitzas shekel. The Gemara entertained the possibility that maybe in Bavel they should announce it earlier, because in Bavel it's going to take longer to get to Yerushalayim and bring their Chatzi Shekel to Yerushalayim. So maybe they should announce it earlier. That was a suggestion the Gemara made, but the Gemara ended up rejecting and deflecting that suggestion. Not necessarily. It could be that the first day of Adar is the day in which we announce. The Gemara went back and forth on that. The Gemara did not arrive at any definitive conclusion. Maybe things should be different in Bavel. We do know this, and we're going to talk more about this later in the Masechta, that there would be a Trumas Lishka, meaning when all the monies would be collected into the Lishka, so 3 times a year they would collect from that chamber, and that collection from that chamber would be for the purpose of buying karbanos. What was done with all the surplus money? Right, I know in terms of running institutions and organizations, we laugh at the idea of surplus money. But what was done with all the surplus money? So the Gemara later on, we'll discuss that later on in terms of what exactly is done with the surplus. But in the meantime, however, 3 times a year they would collect, and the first collection would be on the first day of Nisan, which makes perfect sense, because that's when the beginning of the fiscal year begins. We'll talk later in the Masechta, but the basic idea is that monies for karbanos this year have to be bought for monies of this year. And you cannot use last year's money for this year's karbanos. So in other words, it's not just an accounting issue. It's not just, here's how we're going to do the accounting. But the monies, you can't use last year's monies for this year. You can't use next year's money for this year. Right? I know in most of our Jewish organizations, we do that. But the Beis HaMikdash does not operate that way. The Beis HaMikdash operates at a year-to-year rate. So therefore, all that money, you know, all that money has to come in be there by the first day of Nisan. Okay, that's what we did yesterday. We're on Beis Amud Beis. Just a quick overview of yesterday's Gemara, and we are starting now in the middle of the Amud. B'tesvav bo koren se Megillah b'Korachim. On the 15th day, you read the Megillah in the Korachim in the walled cities. Now, I already noted yesterday, it's an obvious point, our Mishnah seems to be missing an important date on Adar, and that's the 14th day of Adar. Meaning our Mishnah went from the first day of Adar, when we make the announcement, moved right to the 15th day of Adar, and it just skipped, it just passed right by the 14th day of Adar. Now, as I pointed out yesterday, and I'm sticking with my story, I pointed out yesterday, the reason why the Mishnah did that is because we're not learning Megillah. Meaning this is a Masechta not dedicated to the discussion of Purim and when we read the Megillah. In other words, it's incidental, the mentioning of the reading of the Megillah. It happens to be that we're going to be mentioning the 15th day of Adar, so the Mishnah doesn't want to miss an opportunity of saying, oh, by the way, Wall City people read a Megillah that day. But it's not our job right now, while learning Masechta Shkalim, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi didn't feel it necessary to mention right now, and the 14th day we're going to be reading the Megillah as well, because this is not Masechta Megillah, this is Masechta Shkalim. Just as long as we're mentioning the 15th, so then the mentioning of the reading of the Megillah came along as an aside point. But the Gemara, as long as the Mishnah mentioned it, so the Gemara will take an opportunity to talk a little bit about the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah. The Gemara starts off, Lo kinam Rabbi Chalbo. So Rabbi Chalbo doesn't agree, meaning Rabbi Chalbo doesn't seem to agree with our Mishnah. So Rabbi Chelba, Rav Huna, Rav B'Shem, Rabbi Chia, Rabba. You'll forgive me. I'm sure I'm making mistakes in terms of who these Rabbanim are. Okay, I apologize. Hakol Yotzim B'Yudal Shuhuzman Kriyasa. Everyone goes on the 14th day B'Zman Kriyasa, which is the time to read it. So Rabbi Chelba basically says the 14th day is when you read the Megillah. Everybody. Meaning, even people living in walled cities. We'll read on the 14th day. Now, that's hard to understand because you read the Megillah, you just open up a Megillah and you read it inside and you'll know. And when we go through Masechta Megillah, we'll also know that there are 2 days for reading. There's a reading which is done on the 14th, and there's a reading for the 15th. 14th for most Jewish people who live not in a walled city, and the 15th is for people living in a walled city. So, the statement of Rabbi Chelba in of itself seems difficult to just grasp and comprehend. But basically what he says is the 14th day is really the main day of reading, and even if you're living in a walled city, and even if you're reading on the 14th, you're fine. You fulfilled your obligation. So the Gemara is questioning Rabbi Chelba's statement from our Mishnah in Shkalim. Now, I know we could have gone to the Mishnayos in Megillah to question, but again, we're learning Shkalim right now. So from the very first Mishnah in Shkalim, it seems to be Rabbi Chelba is incorrect. So lo ba elalamdecha shekol mitzvos anohagas ba'ad sheni anohagas ba'ad rishon. So the Gemara says, you know, our Mishnah is just making one singular point, and that is that when there are two Adars, so the second Adar is the one we do the mitzvahs, and not the first Adar. But in terms of what day in Adar you should be reading, maybe I'll agree with Rabbi Chelba. Maybe the 14th day is the day to read, even for people living in a walled city. Rabbi Yusuf, Rabbi Acha, Havan Yasvin. So Rav Yusuf and Rav Acha were sitting down. Hamar Rav Yusuf and Rav Acha lo mustarba ela l'sha'avar ava leba lo. So the Gemara says that when Rabbi Chelba made the statement, I think he made the statement only lisha avar, but not lahaba, not for the future. So vahatani, but I'll explain that better in just a moment. Vahatani makom shenagu lekros shnei yamim. No, I'll explain it better right now. Sorry, because the next line of the Gemara is a new point. So in other words, when Rabbi Chelba made the statement, you have to imagine Rabbi Chelba is obviously trying to generate a chiddush. Rabbi Chelba is saying that if you're on the 14th day, so you know what, and you read on the 14th day, you're good to go. So what the Gemara is saying, these two Amoraim saying regarding Rabbi Chelba's statement, you know what I think he means? I think he means that even if, let's say, you are looking forward, meaning you're on the 14th day of Adar, and you read the Megillah, and now the question comes up, well, I really live in a walled city, and I heard the Megillah on the 14th, do I need to hear it again? Rabbi Chelba's response to that is, no, you don't. Meaning, Rabbi Chelba's chiddush is such that even if you have an opportunity to hear the Megillah on the 15th, you don't have to. If you heard the Megillah on the 14th, you're fine. Excuse me. Okay, that's the way the Amoraim understand Rabbi Chelba. So again, it's a big chiddush on the part of Rabbi Chelba, this idea that even though you lived in a walled city, and even though, really fundamentally, your Mikra Megillah is on the 15th, but if you read on the 14th, that's fine. That's okay. V'hatani makum shenagul across the shnei yamim karinosa shnei yamim. The Gemara says, yeah, but we have another brisa, and the brisa says that if the minhag is to read it 2 days, so then you should read it 2 days, right? We'll learn together in the beginning of Masechta Megillah that there were certain communities where they didn't know, they knew they had a wall around their city. They didn't know when the wall was built. Was it built before the time of Yeshua ben Nun? Was it built after? So what do those cities do? So they read on the 14th and on the 15th. That's what they do. So the Gemara says, okay, now let's take Rabbi Chelba's statement into consideration. What did Rabbi Chelba say? He said, well, if you read on the 14th, you're good. You don't have to read on the 15th. And even going forward, you're good. So the Gemara says, wait, I don't understand. In other words, the Brice over here is describing a community who has a minug, an annual minug of reading on the 14th and on the 15th. Rabbi Chelba, how do you respond to that? So Amalei af ana saver kein. He says, no, I agree. Meaning, I agree with Rabbi Chelba that if you read on the 14th day, you fulfilled your obligation. So, Abba Rabbi Menah, v'yeyus, ilu mishiyak rabbi yudalet v'chozer krabi tesvav, shema ein shomem lo. Im at omer kenim sa okir zman krachim biyadecha. And in terms of the Braisa, here's how we'll understand the Braisa. What the Braisa means is like this. Meaning that on occasion where a person says, look, this year I want to read on the 14th, even though I live in the walled city, I want to read on the 14th, so he can do it. like Rabbi Chabo says, but if he wants to institutionalize and say, we're going to live in a walled city, and we're going to institutionally change the day to the 14th, the Gemara says, that you can't do, because if you do so, Im Kain, just reviewing the last line we read, Nimseis Oker Zman Krachim Biyadecha, you've uprooted the Zman Krachim, meaning the time for walled cities to read is the 15th. That's the way it was institutionalized. You want to change it individually, you may. But to institutionally change it, that you're not allowed to do, and that the Gemara says is how to understand the Braisa. But Rabbi Chabo's position could still stand. Okay, so the Gemara just spent about eight, nine lines of Gemara dedicated to the statement of Rabbi Chabo. Essentially what Rabbi Chabo says is that if you are, if you're living in a walled city, even though from an institutional standpoint you should be reading the Megillah on the 15th, if you're in the 14th, you're fine. You're good to go. Okay? That's the... That's basically how Rabbi Chabo's statement stands. Yeah, Dan, you had a question?
Isn't it
being the Megillah the Rabbanan?
It's a mitzvah
the Rabbanan. So your question is brought up by the Rishonim. Again, I'm going on memory now. So the Ran in the beginning of Megillah basically asks your question, and he has a small discussion in terms of if we have a suffix, why are we reading on both days? If I'm not mistaken, the Ran over there says... Oh, it's funny because I'm thinking now, I'm going back to the Ran that we did in Pesachim. Remember we had the suffix by Dalakosos?
Right.
And we had the question of which one should we do? Meaning the Gemara says, I either lean for the first two or the second two. And the Gemara says, we don't know, so therefore we do both. So the Ran also there asked, in Pesachim asks the same question. It's a suffix on a Derabbanan, so why aren't we Makel? So the Ran over there says, yeah, but if we're Makel there, we're not going to be leaning at all. So, but over here, however, you could be Makel and just choose a day, specifically the 14th. I'm not sure. Meaning, right, that's... Okay, I'd have to look again at that Ran in the Megillah to see how he responds. But if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure he responds to your question. Okay, can I just share with you, I have a theory. This is my own thought. This is an original thought, and it's something worth just at least considering. And you don't have to take me that seriously. But I think that, we have a mitzvah of reading the Megillah on the 14th day of 14th day of Adar, World City 15th day of Adar, and you'll read all this in the Megillah. I think that when Haman had the lottery, so I theorized... I shared it with some people. Some took me seriously, some did not. But I theorized that the lottery that he took was only for the month, and not for the date in the month, and that the date that he chose in the month of Adar was somewhat arbitrary, right? It says in the Megillah. I'm reading from the Megillah. So. So he took a lottery, and the lottery came out in the month of Adar. Nothing in the Megillah about the actual date itself. Now it happens to have been that he cast the lottery on the 13th day of Nisan, 11 months prior. So what he decided is, what we'll do is we'll go, date to date. But in other words, in the Megillah itself, it does not mention that there was a lottery that was cast that actually called on what date it should be. And based on this, again, it's my own thought, so please take it for whatever it's worth. But based on this, though, you'll find very often, you'll see the same discussion in the beginning of Masechta Megillah, where like the date for reading the Megillah is like a moving target. It's like, if you're living in a village and you don't have anyone to read the Megillah, so you can read it on the 11th. Right? The 11th. That's the first thing when we get to Megillah. It's the first thing we're going to see. Or you can read on the 12th. Or you can read on the 13th. Or you can read on the 14th. Or if you're a walled city, you'll read on the 15th. Meaning, it's a total moving target. When are we reading the Megillah? So, I'd like to suggest, just as my own thought, that the date of the month is not as significant as the actual month itself. Meaning, it's got to be an Adar. And yes, obviously, we choose a date. The Chachamim chose a date. But the date is not as consequential. And if I'm right, which again is a huge if, but at least you understand the conversation taking place in this Gemara in the Yerushalmi, meaning Rabbi Chelbo says, I know you live in a walled city, and I know you should be reading on the 15th, but if you're on the 14th, that's fine. It's okay. Meaning, well, why? In other words, the Megillah says to read on the 15th. So why is reading on the 14th fine? So maybe because, again, the month is critical, but the date of the month is not as critical. Again, I'm not suggesting for a moment deviating from the date. I'm just pointing out that you can understand some of these discussions taking place over here. We go on in the Gemara. We're on the bottom. We're towards the bottom. Beis Amud Beis. Tani Rishim and Gamla Omer. Mitzvos and Agus be Adar Sheni Ena Agus Barishan. Right. We have two Adars this year. We have two Adars. Right. It's an Ibriar. It's an intercalated year. If I could sound academic, and so therefore we have a second Adar. Which one is the real Adar? I don't know if that's the right question. Right way to phrase the question. But simply put, where's the Adar where we're going to do the mitzvahs? So the answer is Adar number two. Chutz me'hesped v'tanis shein shavin b'zeh uv'zeh. The only exception is hesped v'tanis, meaning you can't eulogize and you can't fast on the 14th and 15th day of Adar, and it doesn't matter whether it's Adar Rishon or Adar Sheni. Meaning even in Adar Rishon, even though we're not celebrating Purim, but still, and we're not reading the Megillah, and we're not doing any of the mitzvot hayom, but still, it has an element of simcha to it, and therefore you can't eulogize and fast even on the 14th and 15th day of Adar Rishon. Meaning this year when we get to Adar Rishon, so no tachanun for us. That's basically how this gemara translates to us. Rabbi Ba, Rabbi Yirmiya b'shem Rav, Rabbi Simon b'shem Rabbi Shua Malevi, Halacha Rabbi Shem Gamliel. And the gemara says that's in fact the accepted halacha. Rav Huna Rabbi Tzipor Amar Hinig Rabbi Chanina. B'tziporin kehada, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And he says, that's in fact what we do. We go like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So, lo amar lehinig, now it's interesting to note, says the Gemara, that it only says that we practice like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, hala halacha lo. But we didn't actually say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Avalein yishtaros kotsvin adarishon v'adarsheni stam, Rabbi Yehuda omer adarishon stam, adarsheni tanyan. Another issue that comes up is whenever we're writing any type of contracts. So when we write a contract, when we're talking about in Eretz Yisrael, so obviously we're going to be dating the contracts. Dating of the contracts is extraordinarily important in terms of establishing a lien against a note. So when you date a contract, and there are two adars, so which one, how are you going to actually write that on the contract? So the Gemara brings a machlokus between Tanayim. So one Tana's opinion is, the Tanakama says, that when if you're an Adar Rishon, you're going to write on the contract Adar Rishon. And then if it's a second Adar, you just simply say Adar. Meaning that in terms of colloquial speak, we'll refer to the second Adar as just Adar. And the first one is Adar Rishon. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and he says, no, just the opposite. The first Adar is just Stam Adar, and the second Adar is going to be called Adar Tanyan, the second Adar. Okay, so a machlokus amongst the Tanaim, just in terms of nomenclature, how we're going to identify which Adar is which in a contract. We're on the very top of Gimel Amud Aleph, and the Gemara now is a continuation of discussing our Mishnah. And our Mishnah talks about public works, meaning all public works need to be done during this time period. We fix the roads, we fix the mikvahs, and we do tzarchei rabim. We take care of the needs of the community. So elayim tzarchei rabim. So now the Gemara is going to go into a little more detail what exactly what we mean tzarchei rabim. So the Gemara says danin dinei mamnos v'dinei nefesh v'dinei makos. So first of all open cases, all open court cases. Let's finish it up. Let's close it. Meaning the courts should basically conclude on all of these different types of cases, whether they be monetary, capital, makos, corporal, upodin erchim v'charam and hekdeshos, and also we redeem any erich, any cherim, any hekdesh. Meaning, if there's any type of appraisals that are necessary, so that that redemption of these items which are dedicated to the Beis Hamikdash and they can be redeemed, so they should be taken care of also during this time. Umashkin esasot. I mean, basically, think about it. In other words, we're in Adar. We're basically coming to the end of the fiscal year. So you're coming to the end of the fiscal year. You want to close all accounts. So if you have outstanding cases, if you have outstanding appraisals, so everything needs to be closed by the time we get to the first day of Nisan. Umashkin is a sota, and if any sota needs to drink the water, I can't imagine like a line of sotas out the door saying, okay, we need, but if there's any, so the Gemara says again, the idea is very simple, just close all cases. Mashkin is a sota, sorfin is a para, Para aduma needs to be burned, so burn it. Or if an egla rufa, break the neck of the egla rufa. In other words, we have a murder, an unsolved murder. So we go through the process of egla rufa. Again, if it's been delayed, if the egla rufa process has been delayed, so now's the time to close it out. Rotsin eved ivri, and also the boring of the hole of the ear of the eved ivri. And again, this is a beis din event, so this should also be done before the first day of Nisan. Umetarnas haMetzora, and we also taras haMetzora. Umefarkenas haMina, and we remove the shoe. Now the Tiklin Chadatin points out that we're not talking about the removal of the shoe. We are discussing rather the opening of the cisterns. Me'al gabe hamayim, from the water. In other words, what they used to do is that they had water supplies all along the way, and those water supplies were under lock and key, because in Israel, half the year it rains, half the year it doesn't. So in the months that it rains, so we want the waters collected. In the months where it doesn't rain, we want to make sure that nobody taps into that water. So it's under lock and key. So as you're moving now towards Nisan, we're going to open it up, because essentially now we have the people going, walking to Yerushalayim. We want them to have water access. Vein machzir nosel, and don't put it back. Meaning once you open it up, so you leave it there. Okay. Adkan. Next in the Gemara. Taman tanina mashkin beis ha-shlachim etzayin ala kvaras. We learned a Mishnah over there. This is a Mishnah in Moed Katan. The Mishnah there describes that we irrigate the fields, meaning these are the things that you could do during Chol HaMoed, umitzaynin al hakvaros, and also you mark off the graves. Marking off the graves is incredibly important, because you're a kohen, or you're even not a kohen, but you want to go to the Beis Hamikdash. You don't want to be walking over a grave and becoming tameh. So therefore, the graves are marked off. So a fresh lime is poured over the grave to mark off where the grave is. So the Gemara has a very simple question. What we just read was a Mishnah in Moed Katan. The Mishnah in Moed Katan is describing what you can do during Chol HaMoed. During Chol HaMoed, meaning, let's go back one day. Let's go back to yesterday's daf. In yesterday's daf, we learned the first Mishnah in Shkalim that they mark off the graves on the first day of Adar. So, let me say it correctly. On the 15th day of Adar, they would mark off the graves. Okay, but that's the 15th day of Adar. So now, a month and change later, they're going to be marking off the graves again. So the Gemara says, first the Gemara asked the question, Lo kvar tziyanu, haven't we already marked them off? Me'adar, tipater. So the Gemara says, give the following solution. Shiyarit shetef al-gasham and v'shetfu. Okay, we marked it off a month ago, but rain came, washed it away. Okay, we got to mark it off again. V'yotzin af al-haklayim. And we go out and we uproot the klayim. Lo kvar yatzu me'adar. Now again, this is a Mishnah in Moed Katan, which describes that we would uproot klayim on Chol HaMoed. The Gemara says, again, go back to our Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Shkalim, and the Gemara says, I'm confused, because in our Mishnah we're describing how this happened on the 15th day of Adar. So the Gemara says, "Tipater shayisa shana afela v'nitzmichim nikarin." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but again, we could just simply say that the Mishnah on Moed Katan is describing where it was a shana afela, literally a dark year. It means that it was a late blossoming year, and so there was no climb to uproot on the 15th day of Adar. So therefore, they had to come back, and you can even uproot the climb even in the middle of Chol HaMoed. Minayin letzion." Minayin letzion. I take it out of context. The question almost sounds, philosophical, but it's not. It's a very practical halachic question of the Gemara. How do I know? Where's the source that I need to mark off graves? Meaning, there's a certain practicality, pragmatic nature to it, where you don't really need to ask the question. I mark off graves so nobody walks over the graves. But essentially, the Gemara wants to know: is there anywhere in Tanakh where we could point and say, yeah, that's the source that tells us that we should be marking off the graves? Meaning, maybe that's not just a din d'rabbanan, but it could be that it's a quasi din d'oraisa. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Brecha, Rabbi Yaakov, Bar Bas Yaakov, B'shem Rabbi Chunya, Debras Chivrin, Rav Yusi Armela, Rav Yaakov, Bar Acha, B'shem Rabbi Chunya, Debras Chivrin, Rav Chiske, Rav Uziel, Bered, Rav Chunya, Debes Chivrin, B'shem Rav Chunya, Debes Chivrin. That was a lengthy introduction. The Tame Yikra. The Gemara says, I'll tell you how we know. We know from the Metzora. Because what happens to the Metzara? So he is Chutzamachni, he goes outside the sea, he goes outside the city, outside the camp, and he's out there by himself. And Tami Yikra. And what does he do? He has to make the following proclamation. I'm Tami. Anyone who's walking by, so he says, I'm Tami. And he has to make that announcement. And basically he tells people, stay away because I'm Tami. And now what the Gemara is doing is the Gemara is making the following logical leap. If the Metzara has to tell people that he's Tami so that nobody comes near him, the graves themselves also have to speak to people and tell them that the Tami. Graves don't speak. So what we do is we mark off the graves to tell everybody. It's basically the way of the grave communicating to the public, hey, I'm Tame, don't come near me. That's one possible source. Kideshe atuma kara lacha bifiha. The tumma should be calling out with its mouth. Va'omer lacha prosh. And say to you, it's time that you need to separate. Rabbi Elai b'shem Rabbi Shimon bar Nachman v'avru avrim beretz v'ra etzem adam mubana etzot zion. So the Gemara has another source, and that's the pasuk in Yecheskel. Now, halachically speaking, the pasuk in Vayikra has more authority than a pasuk in Yecheskel, but okay. We have a pasuk in Yecheskel that speaks to this idea as well. You're the people pass by, they're going to see a bone, etzem adam, uvana etzot zion, and they make a tzion, they make a marker. Etzem mikan shem, uvana etzot zion, etzem. Mikan shemitzayim alatzamos. I was right the first time. Okay, the pasuk ends with the word Sion. I apologize. Etzem. So from the fact that the pasuk in Yecheskel describes an etzem, shemitzayim alatzamos. So that tells us that if there are bones, that you have to mark off the bones. Bones take a long time to decompose. Bones are, right, I know I investigated this matter not that long ago. I don't know how many years it takes for bones to totally decompose. But in other words, it takes a very long time. So in other words, if you have bones buried anywhere, so they for sure need to be marked because you know that there are bones that are going to be over there. So therefore, the surface area where the bones are resting need to be marked. Adam mikamshim mitzayimim ala shejav agogolos. Now, what about the word Adam? So Adam tells us that shejav agogolos, if I have the skull and the majority of the vertebrae of the deceased, so that also needs to be marked off as well because that's also going to give off tumas ohal. Ubana mikamshim mitzayimim agabi even kvua. If it's a fixed stone, so then you mark off that fixed stone. But you do not do it if it's not a fixed stone, for a very simple reason the Gemara is about to explain. Imomer at al gabe even telusha, because if it's not a fixed stone, afhi olechas umetame b'makom acher, it's lo l'makom tahora. The problem is going to be as follows. If it's a movable stone and you marked it off with lime, so essentially what's going to happen is, stone's going to basically, someone may pick up the stone, move the stone, move it to another spot, you're going to see lime on it, and you're going to say, oh no. Somebody's buried over here. And let's say you're walking by and you have truma in your hands, and what are you going to do with the truma? You're going to burn it because you just walked over a stone with lime. So, as much as the Chachamim want us to mark off the areas with mace, but the Chachamim never want a situation where people are going to erroneously assume that you just became Tamei. So mark off the ground, mark off a stone if it's kavua, if it's stationary, but if it's a stone that's movable, don't mark it off. So mikan l'tzion matza even achas mitzianas afapishen mekaimim kain hamal aleha tame. Now, what if you see lime poured on top of the stone? In other words, it's not like a marked off area, but it's just poured right on top of the stone. So you have to assume that the area underneath is where the human remains are. If you walk on top of it, you become tame. Ani omer meis mitzian vayanasun tachteha hayushtayim. But what if there are two stones side by side, where lime is on top of one and lime is on top of the other? Now you can make a different assumption. Now you can assume that really the mace is somewhere in the middle. So amal aleim taru veneim tame. If you're on top of one of the stones, you're tahor. If you're between the stones, you're tame. Ima yachorish bintayim harein ki yachidos. However, if there's a plowed area between these two stones, so then I'm going to change my assumption. Then I'm going to assume that the mace is not between the two, because who would plow right over a mace? Although I know there are Mishnayos and Ohalos that describe if and when that were to happen. But generally, we're going to assume no one's plowing through a grave. So therefore, I'll go back to my first assumption, which is that the stones are directly over the mace. And now the Gemara says, Harein ki yechidios, beinam tahor, svivosam tameh, between them is tahor, on top of them is tameh. Tani ein mitzayin al-basar, sheminit akal ha-basar. One more point about marking off human remains. We talked about marking off the bones. We talked about marking off the skeletal structure. We talked about marking it off at a little bit of a distance. What if it's just human remains flesh? Okay, I know it's an indelicate discussion, but what if it's just human remains flesh? So there the Brisa says don't. Don't mark it off. Even if you know that the human remains over there, but it's flesh and the flesh is going to decompose really quickly, and don't mark it off. So the Gemara says, Nizakal abasar, because what's going to happen is that the flesh is going to decompose. Rav Yustar bar shunam ba'a kume Rabbi Mana. The following question was asked in front of Rabbi Mana. V'lo nimsa mitame taharos l'mafreya. But wait a second. If you know that there's human remains over there, even though it's just flesh, you know there's human remains over there, and the halach is you shouldn't mark it off. I don't understand. Someone's going to walk right over it and become tameh. And don't we want to avoid that? Isn't that the point? Amar lei, very interesting answer. Mutav she's calculable l'sha'a, v'al yis calculable l'olam. Look, it's human remains. It's flesh. It's going to decompose, and it's going to decompose very quickly. So, yes, you're right. In the short term, people are walking over, they're going to become tamei, and unbeknownst to them, they're going to be tamei. I'll take the short-term hit halachically rather than take the long-term hit halachically. Well, what's a long-term hit? Because if we mark it off, then people will think for days, weeks, months, maybe even years, that there's human remains underneath, and you walk over it, you think you're tamei, you touch truma, you're going to burn the truma. So in other words, the long-term halachic consequence is going to be much worse than the short-term. So yes, if we don't mark it off, short-term people will be tamei, they didn't know. But I'd rather take that than the long-term hate of people thinking they're tamei, and in truth not being tamei. So a Gemara that speaks to the idea of when I weigh long-term versus short-term, the long-term consideration, will override the short-term consideration. Good. Okay, that takes us now to the end of the first Mishnah in Shkalim. We're on Gimel Amud Aleph. We're starting now the next Mishnah. In Yushami, I do not know why, but every Mishnah is introduced with the word halacha. Halacha Beis, meaning this is now the second point of the Perek. Amar Yehuda B'Rishona Yoken Numashlichen Lefneihem. Okay, now we're going back to the discussion of Kalayim, meaning they have agents of the Beis Din going around looking at everyone's fields, and if they're growing Kalayim, if there are different seeds that are planted in the field growing together, so what these agents do, they're empowered, they have the authority, is that this is your local enforcement, if you will, they go into your field and they uproot the Kalayim. Now, the way the Mishnah describes it is that originally what they did is a mashlich lefneim. They uprooted and they threw it right down on the person's property. Okay, good. Meaning you can't grow kalayim, so they uprooted it. Misharabu over avera hayim mashlich ledrachim. Now, what happened, unfortunately, says the Mishnah, is you had over avera increase. Meaning more people got into the act. Why did they get into the act? Because think how beneficial it is. Meaning, okay, I know you're uprooting my kalayim, but think about it. Oh, you thank you very much. You're not only taking off my kalayim, you're basically weeding out my field. And not only that, but you're depositing the kalayim right in front of me. My animals now can come and eat it. And you know what? I know you're trying to punish me, but the benefit of you coming and taking my kalayim off my field, actually, I mean, we like it. So as much as the Chachamim wanted to, and the agents wanted to try to literally, you'll forgive the pun, uproot the problem, but the people kind of liked it. So Mishirabu over Evrayim, Mashlich Ledrachim. So the next move is that they threw it out into the street. And eventually, again, it wasn't enough to motivate them from stopping this kind of behavior. So then they said, you know what? We're going to disavow you from your field. You will no longer be the owner of your field. We will assume ownership of your field. They have that kind of ability, that kind of power, authority. And the answer is going to be, yes, they do. And we'll talk more about that in just a moment. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, Tini, I'm Rabbi Yehuda. We can come to our courts of Braisa. The Brisa over here just articulates exactly what we pointed out in the Mishnah, but the Brisa says it with clarity. They were happy two times over. Number one, number one, their fields were weeded out. And not only that, But the climb was deposited in their property. So now they got their animals all together, and the animals now were able to feed on the climb. So thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Now, so the next move was that the Beis Din instituted, you know what, when we pull the climb out of their field, we don't deposit it in their field, we're going to throw it into the street. Throwing it into the street, it now, traffic will run over it, and no longer edible for the animals. But still the people were happy because you weeded our fields, thank you very much. So it wasn't enough of an impediment. So then the Beis Din said, you know what? If you habitually grow climb in your field, we're just going to simply take your field away from you. We will assume ownership of your field. And minayin. And here we get to a very, very basic Gemara. This regarding this idea where Beis Din has that kind of power, where they can come and just simply foreclose on your property. No longer yours, now ours. They don't even have a lien against your property. Doesn't matter. They could just simply take your property away from you. Minayin shehefker Beis Din hefker. How do I know the hefker Beis Din hefker? Now we have Gemara Bavlis that discuss this same idea as well. And if I remember correctly, it's going to be the same source. This takes us to Sefer Ezra. In Ezra, so Ezra was trying to rebuild the nation in the land of Israel, and he was challenged from a number of different ways. And one of them is that the people, first of all, a small percentage of the Jewish population actually came back with them to Eretz Yisrael. Something around 42,000 came back with them to Eretz Yisrael. And on top of that, furthermore, is that they weren't that religious. They were married to non-Jewish women. So what he was trying to do was to persuade them, heavy persuasion, for them to divorce their non-Jewish wives. So basically he said, you come in the next 3 days to the Beis HaMikdash and basically make an accounting for your actions. And if you don't come, meaning why would anyone want to come? So, and if you don't come, they basically got subpoenaed. If you don't come, we're going to basically take over your property. That's what Ezra says. So if Ezra says it, and it's written in Tanakh, it must be that they have that kind of power. Okay, period. Adkan. Next discussion of the Gemara, Minayin Shepatur Min HaMaaseros. How do I know that there's an exemption of Maaser? Meaning, anything that was declared Hefker is no longer obligated in Shumas HaMaaseros. How do we know that? So Rabbi Yonasan Bereid, Rabbi Yitzhak Baracha Shamalah Min Hadah. So he says, I'll tell you how I know that. It's from the following. Ein Ma'avrinus HaShana Lo B'Shvias V'Lo B'Motzei Shvias. V'im Ibra HaRezem U'Uberes. Now, I told you in the good old days, nowadays, When is it going to be an Iber year? When is it going to have an extra Adar? So it's fixed calendar. And the years are of a 19-year cycle. Seven of them, and those 7 years are fixed. In those 19 years are going to be determined when exactly they're going to be leap years. Right? We're in the middle of one right now. So, but in the good old days, however, it was not done on a fixed 19-year cycle. It was done as needed. Now, as needed, it's going to come out to the same numbers. Meaning, in a 19-year range, seven of those years are going to become Iber years, but it wasn't on a fixed rate. It was a variable. So, but anyway, the Mishnah over here describes one of the things that you have to take into consideration is that you can't make neither the Shemitah year nor the post-Shemitah year a Iber year. You cannot do that. Now, and if you do, it's okay. Meaning, I spoke incorrectly. It's not that you can't do it. You shouldn't do it. And if you do, says the Mishnah, okay. Now, v'chorish echad shehu mosif lo pater mimasros. I'm sorry, this is a question. V'chorish echad shehu mosif lo pater mimasros. Now, when the Chachamim add an additional month into the Shemitah year. Now, we know all growth that grows during the Shemitah year is going to be exempt from Shumas HaMaaseros. And basically what the Chachamim have done is that they added an extra month. So in other words, they're basically the ones who declared all that produce for that extra month Hefker, and yet all that produce is going to be exempt from Shumas HaMaaseros. So when Beis Din declares something to be Hefker, it will be exempt from Shumas HaMaaseros. That's our proof. Now, you could ask, and you should ask, well, that's not, in other words, That's not cause and effect. Meaning, what Beis Din did is they just simply extended the Shemitah year, and a consequence of that is going to be that all growth that grows in the year is going to be Hefker. But it's not. They didn't create the month. They just simply extended the year. So it doesn't seem to be a great proof. The Gemara is going to make this point in just a moment. But in the meantime, however, this is the way the Gemara is understanding how we know that when Beis Din declares something to be Hefker, it's going to be exempt from Shumas and Maestros. So the Gemara says, before we come back and discuss this, let's just, as long as we're here, discuss something very quickly, very tangentially. And that is, why can't I make the post-Shemitah year an Ibriyar? Give that year an extra month. It's funny, we who are unfortunately so removed, the answer really is obvious, but like we don't think about these terms because our minds are not agriculturally attuned. So we don't think in these terms. But the answer is really obvious. Once you are agriculturally attuned. So Amar Rabbi Bon Shalom L'Rabbos Bistur Chadash. I'll tell you why. It's very simple. Because the post-Shemitah year. Now remember, the Shemitah year, we didn't grow anything. So in other words, what have we been doing for grain? So we went to the storage. And even in the post-Shemitah year when we're now growing, but we can't eat any of the grains in the post-Shemitah year because of the Isur of Chadash. So in other words, we're getting to Pesach and we are looking so forward to Pesach because all grains only will become permissible when Pesach rolls around. So in the post-Shemitah year, now what do you want to talk about? Adding another month? We're already dipping well into our grain reserves so that we get through the Shemitah year and the post-Shemitah year, and now you want to add another month? So the Gemara says that's why, meaning it's very simple. Again, once you become agriculturally attuned. Right, in other words, in the Shemitah year, we're already dipping into our reserves. And then the post-Shemitah year, just continuously dipping into our reserves, and the addition of a month, that's crazy. So the Gemara says, that's why. So Rabbi Zira, Rabbi Shem, Rabbi Lazar, Hadat, Da'at, Amart, Ashalo, Hita, Rabbi, Lahavi, Yerik, Mechutz, Aretz, Aretz, Aval, Meshehita, Rabbi, Lahavi, Yerik, Mechutz, Aretz, Aretz, Hishviz, Hishar, Shnei, Shavua. The Gemara says, but you know, Rabbi made a decision. And the decision was, we can import vegetation. Now, I'm sure there's much more behind the story, meaning I don't know what it was that got him to that conclusion, but Rebbe made the decision that we're importing vegetation to Eretz Yisrael, so once we're allowed importation, so now we're not as bent on, we need to get to the post-Shemitah year. So basically all years then become equal. In terms of consideration, should we make an Ibriyar, should we not? So we no longer have to take into consideration whether it's a Shemitah year or a post-Shemitah year. Tani ein ma'abrin. Amar Abman ha'da'at ha'amart v'shona sheyu ha'shona ketiknam v'achshor shein ha'shona ketiknam hi shviz hishar shnei shavua. Another point to consider is that there used to be a very set cycle in terms of when things grow. But nowadays there's no longer that set cycle. I don't fully understand what that means. I'm being honest. But in other words, nowadays we don't have that absolute set cycle. Our growth cycle is somewhat a little bit off. And so therefore, once again, another reason why we don't have to take into consideration, is it a Shemitah year, is it a post-Shemitah year? Every year is eligible to make it into a Ibriyar. Okay. Tanisha based Rabbi Gamliel, Ibru b'motzei shvius miyad, miyad. We have a brisa that the yeshiva Rabbi Gamliel, the house Rabbi Gamliel, so they made a post-Shemitah year into an Ibriyar. Okay, so in other words, again, just this idea that nowadays, based on a number of considerations, Rebbe allowed importation, our seasons are a little bit off. Okay, so for a number of reasons, the post-Shemitah year is eligible to make into a Ibriyar. Amar Rav Avon, Ein min hada let at. Shema min haklum. Obviously you see me break my teeth over the Yerushalmi. So you can't learn anything from what we just mentioned. Meaning, why are we here? Why are we discussing making an Ibriyar out of a Shemitah year, out of a post-Shemitah year? Because we wanted to try to prove that when Beis Din declares something Hefker, it's no longer obligated in Shumas and Maestros. What was our big proof? Well, you can make the Ibriyar, you can make the Shemitah year into an Ibriyar. And you can add another month. Well, isn't that additional month a rabbinic institution? And isn't all growth during that month exempt from Trumas and Maisos? Ah, proof. Gemara says, proof nothing. That doesn't prove anything. Because Shamor es Chodesh Ha'aviv, Shomrei u'Shi'aviv b'chidusho. In other words, this idea that we're adding an extra month, that's not a rabbinic enactment. The Chachamim are just simply following orders. The Torah says that if Pesach is going to come out too early, you make sure that Pesach doesn't come out too early. Pesach is going to come out in the spring. So if we're running into a year and you're looking ahead and you see, no, this is it's too early to declare Pesach. So the idea of adding another month into the year, that's not a rabbinic idea. That's a din d'oraisa. So it's not that the rabbis added a month. The Chachamim were just simply following what the Torah's instructions were to make sure Pesach falls out in the spring. We're almost done. Shamor tzachor shavi shamrei shiavo bechidusha. The hada at the amar da and as far as what you wanted to point out, how do I know that when the rabbis declared something hefker that it's no longer obligated Trumas and Maisos, they have that kind of a power, that kind of ability? So he says, for that, we'll just simply go to another Mishnah. Gidi shelo lokei tachtav kol anogaz ba'aretz harei hein zeh shel aniyim. Let's say there's leket on the floor. Leket is one of those agricultural gifts that can go to the poor people. Leket. Right? In other words, it falls out from your hand, it lands on the floor, it's only one or it's only two, so it goes to the ani. Let's say the farmer piles grain on top of that. That's a big no-no. In fact, it's such a no-no that if the farmer puts grain on top of the leket, it basically becomes infected from the leket. It gets leket status. And so, the Amar Rabbi Ami, top of the next Amar, B'Shem Rabbi Shimon Lakish, the Beishamaihi. Now, the first reaction is, well, that's a halach, that's according to Beis Shammai, because that wasn't declared, it wasn't declared hefker, it was just, it was earmarked for poor people. Something which is earmarked for poor people is not, by definition, hefker. Hefker means it is open to everybody. Because according to Beis Hillel, yes, the poor people can enjoy it, right, that infected grain, But they still have to take off Trumas HaMaisos. V'amalei Rabbi Yossi, Shamanu shehu pater mi maiser divrei hakol mishum kenasa. And he says, no, I disagree, you're wrong. In other words, the fact that the rabbis declared all the grains that touched the leket to be ownerless, that's a kenas. That was a fine that was imposed. That was punitive fine imposed against the farmer. You, farmer, are trying to cover up the leket, no good. In fact, any grain that's on top of it is going to get hefker status. And because it gets hefker status, so now it's totally ownerless, and therefore totally free and clear from any trumas and maisos. So that's a good indication, a good source to show us that when Beis Din declares something to be hefker, it will become totally ownerless and exempt from trumas and maisos. Okay, we finished up today the first Mishnah. We went over the reading of the Megillah, we talked about public works, where public works are done during the month of Adar, after the 15th day of Adar. And then we talked about the uprooting of the Kalayim, and the Gemara went into a discussion of the Hefker, Beis Din Hefker. A very basic discussion that we have a couple times throughout Shas.